look at the dying. You only encourage them. The homeless, the hungry, the hurting. They're not really there, and it's not polite to stare. You're driving your wallet on the rush hour freeway, so don't stop for empty pockets or slow down to look at accidents or the boogeyman will get. Pretty soon, the cops will clear them all away, anyway, and your eyes will be safe. And when you're dying, oh, yes, you will, no one will look.
And that was Brooklyn poet Julia Winograd giving you a preview of her new book, Dead People Laughing, the poem, Don't Look at the Dying. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this, my name is Robert Norris, and you're listening to the last of the Bathrobes Piers Broadside shows. I've been promising to quit this show for the last three shows, and today is no exception. It's really hard to give up this show because so much information continues to come my way that I think is interesting that I want to share with people. I actually promised I would give it up because I'm now publishing a paper, well, actually a newsletter, called the Street Shit Sheet. I'm on issue 155. I began the Street Shit Sheet in 1988, 154 issues ago. This issue is a dime, and I'm trying to get one out every week. We talk about the youth curfew, which is coming into an effect in early September, and about the case of a guy jacked up by folks at the boardwalk, by boardwalk rent-a-thugs, as I call them. If you want to get a copy of the Street Shit Sheet, you can give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is headquarters for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and my phone. So give a call if you're interested in the Street Shit Sheet, or if you're interested in Street Spirit, which is a monthly newspaper that we distribute from San Francisco, which is much more professionally produced, longer, has a lot of good articles in it. The lead article this month is Presidio Housing Takeover, about the Homes Not Jails takeover of vacant housing at the San Francisco Presidio that really should be going to homeless people. It should be going to somebody anyway, and it's not going to anybody, and is laid vacant. In fact, the city has been destroying much of that housing. In fact, we're going to begin this show with the continuation of an interview that we heard some of last week, or perhaps it was the week before, by Ted Gullickson. Ted is a very articulate, very active guy up in San Francisco who's a tenant activist, heads the San Francisco Tenants Union, and is also involved in Homes Not Jails. We reached him by phone a week or two ago after the housing takeover, and he talked to us, and here's some more of what he said.
Do you want to describe anything, what happened on Sunday, when you were, I should say, on Saturday, when this demonstration took place?
Yeah, well, a number of people, about half the people who occupied the housing, went ahead of them. We had a march and rally at downtown San Francisco in the afternoon. Ramona Africa was one of the speakers, and we set up a car caravan and a bus caravan out to the Presidio. Some of the people who occupied went ahead of the march and rally and took control of the two houses and moved into them.
Now, did the police attempt to stop that when it was happening? I know when I was driving up there, I found lots of roads were blocked off. Were the police successful in stopping one of the building occupations?
No, the police were, they knew that something was going to be happening, and they blocked off many of the roads. They blocked off access to the Wherry housing, which they thought we would try to occupy, but anticipating that they would be blocking that off, we chose these other sites instead. So we were able to get into the housing no problem. At some point, the police came and checked out this housing that we occupied after the people were already inside. But the people inside were squirreled away on the top floors, and the police, even though they checked the housing, they didn't realize that people were inside and simply left. So then when the march and rally came, people who were already inside hung out their banners. And about 20, 25 people who were with the march and rally then took over another unit of housing. And then following that, there was a speak out at the sites, and people both from inside the houses, and people over the march and rally made many statements, and during all this time the police were mobilizing, and eventually the police felt they had enough resources there and moved in with about 50 cops or so, and busted in the doors and arrested everyone inside.
What happened then?
Everyone was taken to a already set up area of the Presidio where people were fingerprinted and given citations for trespassing and demonstrating without a permit.
Now, was a permit required to protest at the Presidio? Is that
the the Presidio has this strange thing where they've designated certain areas as what they call First Amendment areas.
And that was not one of those areas?
There's not too many of these so-called First Amendment areas, and they're generally in places that are inaccessible to...
Or irrelevant. Right.
If you want to get a permit to demonstrate at the Presidio, you have to do it in one of those areas. And so we didn't even try to get a permit because we didn't want to just do a demonstration in one of their parking lots somewhere. We wanted to demonstrate that this housing could be used to house.
Mm-hmm. So this is what, Homes Not Jail's second or third such occupation?
It's actually the fourth one at the Presidio.
Uh-huh. When were the previous ones?
One in 93, 94, and 95.
And what were the results? Did anyone go to jail, or let's just say, was anyone sentenced to jail afterward at a trial? I know that it's...
Yeah, one of them, I guess it was, I think it was the 95 one, the same charges, trespassing, demonstrating without a permit, resulted in a court trial in which Homes Not Jails and our attorneys used a necessity defense, arguing that the dangers of homelessness were severe enough that our breaking into these units and occupying them was justified. And the defense was pretty good. Unfortunately, at the Presidio, the charges they give people are infractions as opposed to misdemeanors. So we had no right to a jury trial, and we had to make this argument before a judge.
Actually, my understanding is that they're misdemeanors, but in a federal court, unless it exceeds 6 months and, I guess, $1,000 fine, something like that, you can still get tried before a judge.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. So we were before a judge as opposed to a jury, and when you have a necessity defense, it almost is necessary to be before a jury, as a judge is going to look at the technicalities of the law. And we put together a pretty good defense, and we had expert witnesses who testified very persuasively about the dangers of homelessness, about the unavailability of shelter beds on the night of the action.
Do we have a similar kind of testimony likely to be coming up for our defense?
That's what we would expect if we go ahead again to trial. It's a good form to continue to raise the same issues that we raised.
Now, what was the result? You were found guilty?
We're found guilty of trespassing and not guilty of demonstrating without a permit.
And was the result that anybody went to jail, or was it simply community service?
And hours of community service, which I personally then used to help religious witness with homeless people.
To plan the next occupation?
Because
religious witness indeed did an occupation, I guess, what, two months ago?
Yeah. They've done three or four themselves. There's been a lot of takeovers out of the city, and at some point there, so far we've gotten the issue raised, and at some point they're going to have to start listening to us seriously.
When talking to other protesters up there, I learned that some of them who don't look, shall we say, like your average person on the street who's, raggedy in clothing and so forth, are actually using Presidio housing themselves at other times. They're squatting there.
Yeah, we've been trying to get good squats going there for a long time. I'm constantly sending people out there. We've never had one that has lasted very long, but we're continually spreading the word to people who are living on the streets that if they are looking for housing, there's plenty of it at the city.
Now, one of the tactics used by the protesters in this demonstration was to refuse to give their names or to show ID. Can you describe why that was done and what effect that had?
Well, the initial plan was to... Can we hold this for a sec?
Sure.
I was saying... Well, the intent was to make sure that everyone gets charged with the same same charge, that certain people weren't highlighted and given additional charges, that sort of thing.
Was the intention also to clog the jails, or was that just...
That's always part of the strategy of any sort of jail solidarity strategy, and...
I know that some people did get charged with a third charge, false information.
Yeah, the...
Which means not giving the name, the proper name, or...
Eventually, the police police were generally giving the same charges to people, so eventually everyone cited out that night. As I understand it, the last person to get out was at 2 o'clock in the morning. I guess you could say it was
Were the buildings vandalized? Did you have any reports of that?
No. You know, all the buildings out there vandalized at this point to some degree or another. And for example, the one that we went into was had some broken windows before we ever moved into it.
Although it looked in pretty good shape.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty nice place for people to be able to live, and the floors are a little warped, but otherwise looked pretty good. So this will be going to what, arraignment on August, is it 14th?
August 14th, right.
And have attorneys been secured for people, or are they expected to provide their own attorneys?
Well, we'll get some attorneys. We have, Homestead Jails has a regular corps of attorneys who the National Lawyers Guild have represented us at all our previous court cases. Mm-hmm. Expect that they will do the same at this one, and we'll round up other additional attorneys through the National Lawyers Guild as we do.
What should supporters of this group do, or supporters of Homes Not Jails do? Any announcements about, August 14th, is that, 8:30 in the morning? Or?
Yeah, at this point we're not organizing anything special for that. The initial arraignment is very informal. We may end up organizing something for it, but at this moment we don't have anything organized.
That'll be at the Federal Building in San Francisco?
Right.
You know the address of that building?
455 Golden Gate.
That sounds like that's about it.
Golden Gate and between Polk and Larkin.
If people want more information about Homes Not Jails and what's going on with them, what should they do?
They can call the San Francisco Tenants Union, which provides support for Homes Not Jails. And our telephone number is 415-282-5525.
Well, listen, thank you, Ted Gullickson, for your patience in the midst of what's been a busy day. You've got incoming calls coming in and out, and I guess all the jailbirds will get together on the 14th and chatter.
And we all did show up on the 14th to appear in federal magistrate's court. Even though the crime is a misdemeanor, we had no option for a jury trial. And there were quite a few of us, I think 45 or 50 out of a total of 65 arrested. Only three pleaded out, and that was because one had to go back to a foreign country, I think it was Sardinia or Italy, and two others had other problems that didn't allow them to be present at the trial or throughout the negotiating process. We originally thought we had a deal with the federal prosecutor that would have allowed us to plead to an infraction and do 14 hours of community service, have no probation, have essentially nothing in our records really of any significance, and have everybody reduced to the same charges, except for one guy who kind of panicked and ran away, but his charges would not be any more significantly serious. He'd just do a few more hours of community service. Apparently the federal prosecutor was shooting for a bigger game or hype up, and she overruled the negotiations made by her assistant, which we had spent hours doing. As a consequence, we did not plead at all and set forward the process until, I guess it's Monday the 18th, and we're going to be, some of us will be pleading. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be down here working on stuff, and that'll be happening through a very vital and active attorney, Katya Komisarek, who's taking on a lot of cases pro bono. That means for free, and she's also she's an activist herself who spent a lot of time in jail for it, pounding on a nuclear weapon. I think she got part of a nuclear weapon dismantled down at Lompoc military base. She was quite a heroine to me in the mid-80s, and I was really impressed with her work as an attorney. She hasn't forgotten that she's first an activist and second an attorney, and that is such a rare thing. Even among attorneys who are very sympathetic or who are activists, there's usually this
overlayer of kind of professionalism where they are part of a different caste, their time is more valuable than yours, they can't talk to you now, and so forth. This Katya was completely different when we went up to the Homes Not Jails arraignment. Police tried to seize, and did seize, my tape recorder in the hallways after they the technical word is assaulted a young woman who was a demonstrator because she had a camera and they wanted to seize that camera. I'm going to play you a little bit of that interaction. It took me all day to get back the tape recorder and even longer to get back the tape. And Katya Komisarek was there all the way pushing to get that back and yet acting very diplomatic when that was required. Here's the situation in the federal building back in several days ago when we went in for the Homes Not Jails arraignment. It's just a flash, but it gives you some idea of what was going on, what people were saying, and the kind of consternation that was produced by the court security and federal marshals who were really annoyed to have these dozens of scruffy long hairs and lounging activists filling the corridors of their precious federal building, our federal building, I might say.
Having a small confrontation in the hallway here in the federal building, 15th floor.
She just wants to make sure that nothing's
going to show.
And if we just took things a little more slowly, it wouldn't be so problematic.
No, we don't need a bunch of people crowding around us either.
It makes me a little nervous when you're
It makes me a little nervous when I get somebody's crowding around.
You're the one who started.
Well, there are three people surrounding one woman, so that makes us a little bit nervous as well.
We're
all a lot bigger than she is.
So the issue is a camera, which the federal marshals are concerned about here in the 15th floor.
You can't take out the film? Why don't you just shoot the rest of the wall?
We're going to get it back as soon as
you can get the camera back. We're not going to do anything but leave it in the office and take
can
it.
Can I have a little?
Yeah, I'll give you something.
Just give me a receipt.
Give me something. Yeah.
And the one of the workers here is filling out a receipt to give to the guilty, the vicious camera bearer.
Come and go with me, and I'll get you a receipt.
Thank you.
Okay. And
where does it say no photos? I never saw
it. And my first, really small.
So the sign on the wall says, "Notice: use of the following items on the court floors is prohibited: cameras, tape recorders, and telephones." And of course, in using the I had broken a rule, and the court security seized the tape recorder, beginning a long process of trying to get it and the tape back. We ultimately had to get a court order from a judge to get the tape recorder back, and we were treated to a probably typical display of how federal personnel, including the marshals, treat ordinary citizens, particularly citizens who don't look too wealthy or too conventional. They were abusive, they refused to give their names, they jacked us around for 6 hours. I guess it's all pretty standard. And complaints will be going out in triplicate for whatever it's worth, but again, my hat's off to attorney and activist Katya Komisarek, who not only stood by us, but went the extra mile after that to be present during negotiations with the marshals, to present herself and insist that our rights be respected. And she did this, again, without seeking a penny for her services, even though she needs the money, as we all do these days. Currently, the case is going to trial. It looks like we're going to each of us be demanding a separate court-appointed lawyer, and some of us are going with Katya. And the trials are not allowed to be jury trials. They'll be trials in front of a judge, but we will be able to cross-examine the officers. And since there are a number of officers and other witnesses we can put on, as well as 45 to 60 of us, that actually some of us may actually go all the way through, not just to trial, but go to jail and so forth, and make a big point of actually
carrying this to the ultimate conclusion, it's going to take a lot of time and court energy, particularly with those court-appointed attorneys, and we're thinking that the threat of that will probably persuade authorities to be reasonable and return to the original deal that we kind of agreed to with the assistant federal prosecutor. But more on that as it happens. Palo Alto, California was one of the communities that passed an anti-homeless sit-lie law, as it's called, this spring, making it illegal for homeless people, actually for everybody, but it really only impacts homeless people, to sit down on the main street, which is University Avenue, except in a special ghettoized area off to the side, a plaza area. The law was passed by a so-called liberal city council over almost overwhelming opposition from more articulate people than I've ever heard speak at city council meetings before. And then there was a large demonstration of 150 to 200 people in late April who actually came and sat down protesting the law. There have been no further protests up in Palo Alto. The law is still in force, but according to the activists there, it's not being enforced. What is being enforced, however, are attacks on where homeless people live. Though they don't have a sleeping ban in Palo Alto like we have in Santa Cruz, they are due periodic sleeps of the riverbanks where people sleep. And here we're talking to several Palo Alto activists about that and what's happening with that.
We're up here at University and Bryant Streets, hanging out around the corner from Noah's Bagels with Larry Duncan, Elizabeth Ash, and a passel of folks. With us is Trouble Tracker Ann Turner from San Jose Community Homeless Alliance. And of course, beggar backer Becky Johnson from Santa Cruz. Larry Duncan just handed me a number of reprints of articles from the Palo Alto Weekly concerning, dare I say it, harassment of the homeless in wooded areas. What's that all about?
That's the creek, and the encampment under the bridge primarily. July 14th, 13th, the Menlo Park police posted notices telling people that they had to be out within 2 weeks.
You're pulling out a sign, attention, creek residents, property removal notice from the both Palo Alto and Menlo Park Police Departments. The areas in the San Francisco Creek, including the El Camino Bridge, will be permanently cleared out of all personal items, including beds, clothes, food, etc., bodies. The creek is no longer available for camping and storage. It has been declared to have unsanitary and nuisance conditions, including human waste, trash, debris, lack of clean water, and other conditions that give this area a high potential for the transmission of diseases and periodically burden the stream with pollutants, which of course means that they're immediately putting in hot and cold running water and restrooms for the poor, right?
There was a restroom, but it's since been removed. It was used for when they were building a bike bridge. But the health department inspection that they used to state that there was debris and trash, etc., was about one single campsite adjacent to the bridge campsite. It was removed immediately after the inspection. That was 4 months before the notice was posted.
Now, how many people would you estimate live in this area who are without homes?
150 or so.
Without roofs, actually. 150. And how many people would you estimate are in Palo Alto generally who have no homes?
That's it, about 100.
And so they all pretty much live down there?
No, about... Yeah, I mean, even up and down the creek in the creek area, there's about 50 people, so it's about a third of the people.
Now, the rest of that notice also says, I see property, those without a place to live are referred to organizations that can provide help, such as the Homeless Center on the grounds of the Veterans Administration Hospital. Does that help actually exist?
The Clara Mateo shelter on the VA property is run by the Salvation Army, whose motto is blood and fire, not home sweet home.
I see. So it's not, should we say, too likely that homeless people would get assistance if they go there?
None of the people I know living near the creek, no. You know, near the creek.
So what do they do if a homeless person shows up and says, hey, this is a notice sent me down to you. What's the response to the Salvation Army? Has anyone tried?
No one at the bridge campsite has tried that because they know it's futile. And beside that, I mean, it's like, this is a correctional facility. It's not a shelter.
So they want you to sign on to Jesus, that sort of thing?
Random drug checks, etc. Yeah.
And then you're looking at this notice that you have here. It's kind of a bright orange pink. And then largely at the bottom, it's large letters. It says, property found in the creek on Wednesday, July 16th, 1997, and thereafter, meaning, of course, near the creek, will be discarded. Now, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to call Officer Mark Lowry, the Menlo Park Police Department, Officer Patty Stone, at the Palo Alto Police Department. Did you call them up and ask if they wanted to put those folks up? Or?
Not yet.
Any more comments on this notice? I mean, did they, in fact, roll in and start ticketing and arresting people, or what happened?
No, I went to the opening of the Clara Mateo shelter because I was unfamiliar with the Menlo Park power structure. I ran into Officer Dominic Palusa, or Detective Palusa. The guy said, people have to go away. And I kept asking him where. And he said he didn't care. Kitty Palmer of the Santa Clara Homelessness Task Force did come a couple of weeks ago. And people were saying that they didn't want to go to a shelter, they wanted Section 8 housing, affordable housing. She said that even if she could get those certificates, she recommended they move to Modesto or Sacramento to secure their certificate. They have 120 days to do that.
What about Bora Bora, New Guinea?
She hadn't mentioned that yet.
Very idyllic area. Possibly the homeless could relocate there without undue congestion.
On the bright side, she did recommend that they could come back when the housing situation improves in the peninsula.
I see. So there is hope for a bright future.
Yes.
Now, Palo Alto was once a state of, it once had quite a demonstration last April when there was a candlelit brouhaha down on University Avenue, actually not too far from where we're sitting, concerning the sitting ban, which of course precludes what this guy is doing, fixing his bike here, although I guess he's right off the University Avenue. I'm not sure if he's criminal or not, but sitting down on University Avenue during what, a large swath of the day and much of the evening is technically illegal, isn't that right, Larry?
Correct.
Now, what's been happening? Has that been enforced by the gendarmes? What's the story?
Not at all. No, it hasn't.
So, cops walk by you as you sit down on the avenue?
Yeah. In fact, I'll deliberately sit on the ground when I see the cops going to Starbucks.
As a token of respect for the police officers?
Yeah.
Show them you mean no harm?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, in other words, actually, I spoke with, I'm not sure if it was the husband or companion of Faith Bell, the bookshop owner or worker or whatever, manager, who opposed the sitting ban at City Hall during the spring when it was discussed at some length, along with many, many other people, of course. And Bell is out of town, but this guy said that, in essence, the law no longer has any, it's acting sort of as a moral statement rather than a legal statement. It's not being used in any legal capacity.
Correct. Cool. It was symbolic more than anything.
But on the other hand, it appears that the cops are going to the heart of the situation by going after the people at their sleeping spots.
Yeah. Trying to sort through why all of this is happening. A lot of it has to do with the Sand Hill project that Stanford University wants to build, $1/3 billion project. And what that's done is it's fired up the neighborhood associations adjacent to the creek. And after they've gotten through talking about their number one priority, the traffic in their neighborhoods, et cetera, then they start talking about how frightened they are of people from the creek wandering through their neighborhood, scaring their dogs or whatever. Joe Baldwin with the Urban Ministry asked for detailed complaints from at least the North Palo Alto Neighborhood Association. Of the 97 complaints, 86 of them were appearance. They had nothing to do with any criminal behavior. And the 11 left over, they had to do with, I woke up in the morning, my newspaper was missing.
Aha! Well, it is very important to receive one's news in the early morning hours.
Or make it.
Yes. Anything you want to add for those who are either completely ignorant of the situation or ravenous for more details?
No, not at this point.
Thank you, Larry. Now, you're a long-time Palo Alto resident?
Yeah, about 4 decades.
And you sleep out?
Yes.
And why haven't you been arrested?
I've asked them to.
I see. Well, perhaps in the future we'll hear something from behind the iron bars. Hopefully. Right. Margaret, what's happening here in Palo Alto?
Well, we're trying to deal with another sweep of the homeless, this time in the area between two cities in a creek bed.
Is this sort of a traditional yearly ritual, sort of like the gay Jewish, the exciting Jewish sports that, or I should say, the Nazi annual attacks on the Jews, which caused such good humor in the German community in the 30s?
Well, what typically happens in Palo Alto for the last decade or so in the creek is that just before the rain starts, the police go down and try to evict everyone living in the creek to get rid of their belongings so that they won't wash down the creek. But this appears to be something different. This time they claim that they won't be allowed to come back, that there'll be regular patrols in the creek to keep them from returning.
And this is not what they say in other years?
Or? No. We've known for several years that they've been, the two police forces between these two cities, Palo Alto and Menlo Park, have been working on permanently removing people from the creek. They've admitted to that themselves. So, with the opening of a 45-bed shelter in Menlo Park, they've now decided to go ahead with this effort to keep people out of the creek. Right after this Clara Mateo shelter is what they call it in Menlo Park, between the two counties.
Does it have any open beds or are they all filled?
They're not all filled, but 7 of the 8 people from Palo Alto who applied to the shelter were turned down when they did have beds.
What were the reasons?
The reasons were that they weren't in a program that qualified them. Apparently there's a lot of restrictions on who can be in the shelter and what kinds of programs they have. And
in the past, some kind of stuff like that.
Yeah, probably. So in other words, the existence of a shelter is now being used as a pretext for destroying the makeshift homes of 50 people.
Of 15 people.
15 people.
Yes. So are 15 people under the bridge, others camped along the creek. The exact numbers, I don't know.
Something to drink?
No, thanks.
When you're done, I'd like to speak with you.
Sure. And how is the homeless community here in Palo Alto responding to this latest pogrom?
I got my best friend.
Unfortunately, the homeless community in Palo Alto is the same as the homeless community everywhere. They're pretty disorganized, and they don't have a lot of resources. They're not really aware of all the mechanizations that are going on and how to address the problems that are being created.
City Council in Palo Alto, are they appealing to the good faith, good sense, and good riddance? Appealing to the hearts and minds of the city, or the hearts, at least the hearts, that appealing to the pocketbooks of the City Council? Are they going to the City Council and speaking to them, saying, get off our backs, send those cops somewhere else, come on, give us a break?
Well, as you know, we just not very long ago finished with trying to stop the city from passing a sit-lie ordinance, which we failed to do. And this came right on the heels of that, and No, we're not organized. Most of us don't have a lot of time to do
right.
these things.
I'm not critical of you for that. I'm just wondering if the occasional voice is raised.
We intend to go to the both city council meetings of both cities, the next city council meetings that come up, and appeal to them to be a little kinder and gentler.
Perhaps a little less transparently rapacious in their attempt to remove people from places where they've been living and provide no alternate space.
Right, yeah.
Anything you want to add that you think might be of interest to folks in the Santa Cruz area? Don't come to Palo Alto with your sleeping bag?
Well, it's all right with me if you come to Palo Alto with your sleeping bag. But I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find a place to put it.
Where do folks generally kind of get together here in Grow Without Homes? Is there like a cafe where folks hang out?
Well, this corner, the corner of University and Bryant, is if there's a congregating place for homeless people in the city, this is it, other than the drop-in center. In the mornings, there's a drop-in center run by a coalition of churches that the homeless go to meet at. And then in the afternoons, they scatter mostly, but some meet at this corner or pass through sometime during the day. And
any word from those jovial students of SHAC, Stanford Homelessness Action Coalition?
Yes, the jovial students of SHAC are working on this. I'm part of that group, although I'm not a student. We're going to be writing a guest editorial for the newspapers. We're going to the city council meetings. We're going to try and contact the state, this SamTrans and some other people we think might be involved with this and at least
respond in some way.
Respond, yes.
Excellent. Is there any way any people can get in touch with you if they wish to support you? Or the group you work with. Give us a call at 423-4833 if you're in the Santa Cruz area. That's the Huff headquarters, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Or if you happen to be in Palo Alto, wander on by corner of Bryant University and look for an old geezer with a blue shirt and a woman with red toenail polish.
It is immoral to make already unhoused people homeless.
To DJ Ketamine from Boston, I'm a former homeless person, and I'd like to encourage the homeless people of California to take aggressive action such as the people have in England, because in England you're not considered homeless, you're considered living an alternative lifestyle. What they do there is take over complete city blocks and demand action and attention. If the people in California did this instead of trying to reason with the governor and going to all these town hall meetings, they might see more results.
So have you actually been a part of any of these kinds of occupations or just watched them from afar?
It depends. In Boston, I was a part of many occupations, which is completely different because you have to deal with winter there, and if it's cold, you can freeze to death overnight. I don't think people out here have to face that fear, which is completely different from the situation that I was in. But I think if through positive work, and you can accomplish anything that you want to accomplish.
How long have you been out here?
I've been in California for 4 years.
And have you you've been involved in any similar occupations here?
No, I haven't.
Would you join those occupations if they were happening?
If I thought that the people had their shit together, yes.
Because recently there was occupation of Wary Housing in the Presidio up in San Francisco by a group called Homes Not Jails. You may have heard about that.
I haven't heard of that, and I'm glad to see that they're starting to do it in this country because I think it gets the most results.
Well, thanks a lot, and check out the Street Spirit and the Street Shit Sheet. Tell me what you think of it, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you very much for your time. Have a nice day.
Sure.
And you're still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the lingering remains of a two-hour show this day. It'll be an hour and a half that we have broadcast every, most recently every Sunday at 11 o'clock. You're invited, of course, to call in with your reactions to the show, which even if it does not continue, we will hope to broadcast through print media your comments in the Street Shit Sheet, which is a homeless newsletter that will be coming out, we hope, pretty much weekly. Actually, we've done this at least 1 week running, and we're hoping to continue our good record around this issue. So give a call to 423-4833 if you have anything you comes up, that has come up, that you think should be coming up as a consequence of any of the issues we are raising on this show. If you have objections, if you have other views, hey, people deserve to hear them. People deserve to be able to read about them. So give a call, 423-4833. Palo Alto isn't the only place that's having problems, of course, and isn't the only place for the homeless movement that's responding to police repression. San Jose has a group called the Community Homeless Alliance, which meets every Tuesday at 11 o'clock at First Christian Church, 80 South 5th Street, for those of you who are interested in San Jose. And this Tuesday, they're not only going to be meeting at 11, actually it's going to be on the 19th. They're not only meeting at 11, they are going to be walking, having a what they call a spiritual walk. They're going to be asking the community to join them in demanding that police sweeps of the homeless stop, that a safe place to sleep be established, and more important, that affordable housing be opened up to homeless people. This has always been the focus of the San Jose Community Homeless Alliance. Here in Santa Cruz, much of my focus with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has been civil rights for poor people and for homeless people, and opposition to police abuse, opposition to laws that make homelessness criminal in public spaces, such as the sleeping ban, the sitting ban, laws making it illegal to lie down or stand up on public property, such as, for example, the Tom Scribner statue, where people traditionally do stand to speak and address crowds. It's now become sacrosanct, and people have actually been convicted for sitting on it, even though people regularly from businesses sit on it and eat their lunches there without being molested by the armed police officers who seem to so fastidiously go after poor people and homeless people, which of course is their function downtown, as far as the merchants are concerned, to remove the unsightly and the unprofitable from public view and make this as much as possible a kind of MTV Dreamland-like Disneyland joint where you spend your bucks and you go home. It's a hard thing to say and a harsh thing to say, but I speak based on the actions of merchants who otherwise seem commendable in their self-presentation and their friendliness and their accessibility. Cat and Canary, for instance, is a store that, my friend Traveling Tom Noddy, who's he's the bubble man, used to be the puppet man. He helped organize the street performers' guidelines back in the early 80s in order to circumvent city council regulation and restrictions on street performers. And he's always been concerned about rights of poor people and homeless people, and particularly performers. He has had a very positive view of the owners, particularly Julie Hendy of Cat and Canary. And a lot of these folks are very positive in how they present themselves, and I got a very positive view when I talked to her. You may recall last week I did an interview with Julie Hendy about the issue of Ricky Prim and whether this black man suffered racial discrimination at the store when he was arrested for returning an item that they decided was stolen but was not, clearly not, because he had the receipt. And they admitted they made a mistake, and they wanted to resolve it all, although they didn't want to pay him anything for the false arrest, and the issue is still outstanding. But anyway, Julie impressed me as a fine person, an accessible person, so did her partner, and yet these are the same people from the same store from whom homeless people have gotten lots of grief because of whose complaints, perhaps added to the complaints of the El Centro residential area right above the Cat and Canary benches were literally torn out and relocated in order to divert young and countercultural people from in front of Cat and Canary. So it's really strange that public personas of people can really clash with how they act in terms of public policy, and it's really an interesting contradiction. And it's really judge merchants and those who represent them by their actions. So for instance, the controversy raised by the merchants' Real Change Not Spare Change yellow card hoax program, as I call it, whereby members of the public, downtown residents, visitors were encouraged to pick up little yellow slips to kind of toss at homeless people instead of money when they were asked for spare change. And the slips had phone numbers allegedly for services that they could use that would help them meet the needs that the change would supposedly go to meet. We found, of course, the numbers led to services that were full or inapplicable, and that was essentially a publicity gimmick to help drive away the poor from downtown, and really to convince people that it's okay to harden your hearts because all kinds of services which don't exist do exist. We tried to bring this to the attention of Janaea Kelly, the lawyer who was kind of spearheading this effort, and to Linda Steinau, the head of the Downtown Association. And they apparently reassured negotiator and activist David Silva of the Green Party, who talked at length with Janaea Kelly several times, and reassured that David that, oh, they were going to change any mistakes in the cards, and they were going to make sure that homeless people were not just told to spend money to make phone calls to answering machines to services that were full, but they were also offering